A63, number 18B.
Yes, so we can see that therefore we have to conform our lives to certain spiritual qualities, and that is the important thing. Not the blessing is the important thing. That will happen anyway. The moment we have a right inward attitude, we know that that demonstrates itself. It's fundamental part of the teaching of Christian Science, that consciousness determines your experience. What kind of a consciousness should you have? What kind of an attitude should you have? When you have a right attitude, that demonstrates itself. It demonstrates itself. You don't have then to demonstrate it. See, one has mostly a completely wrong concept of practice and of demonstration. One always wants to demonstrate truth, and if one wants to demonstrate truth, one thinks of how truth is then applying itself to a problem. Is that what most people think? That practice is how to apply a truth to a problem. That is not practice. That's demonstration. Practice is how do we conform to the principle. That's practice. Because blessed is he that has this and this attitude. Then it demonstrates itself. So it isn't how can he take mind and spirit and soul and principle and life, truth and love and throw it at the problem so that it sticks at the problem, that it gives a blaster over the problem and therefore heals the problem. Practice is how to get in the rhythm with, how to get in accord with, how to get at one with the principle of being. That's practice. But of that, no, most students don't think about that. They say, oh yes, in the textbook there is somewhere a principle. I take that principle and I put it as a blaster. You say a blaster? Plaster? Huh? Over the wounds, huh? I apply it and hopefully the wound will heal. Whereas we would like to see, what practice is to be in accord with principle. See? Prayer is all about how to get in accord with principle. And that's the beatitude. It says, if you have certain spiritual states of consciousness or even of life, then this is bringing you all the blessing. Yeah? Therefore, here we are summoned really to experience and to express these divine qualities. So let's run through those seven statements of Beatitudes and see what we have to embody. We take the first beatitude. What is the first beatitude? Without looking down, everybody knows the first beatitude by now, after having studied 40 years of Christian Science textbook. Yeah, blessed are the poor in spirit. Now, what does that mean? We take first the attitude, and then we see the blessing. Why is the attitude mind? The poor in spirit are seeking, yes. I don't know. Yes, it's those that know that they don't know, huh? Yes. But shouldn't we know that we know? Would be nice. Yes, it would be nice, huh? Yeah. Where in the Beatitudes do we have that kind of a consciousness, which you said you would like to have, that we know what you know? In the six, huh? In the six. See? Here, it's naturally showing the creative sense again. We don't have to forget that they are all built up in the creative order. They are not showing reality from the standpoint of absolute Christian Science. They are really showing the creative order. And in the creative order, naturally, in the first, you have a sense, let there be light. It isn't the sense, everything is light. But it's an approach, you see, it's still the world, it's an approach, and the approach within us is still that where we constantly feel there is something more to know. There is something more I can know. I don't know yet all. There is a greater wisdom to be seen. There is a greater intelligence still to be fathomed. It's still that inquiring sense within us that is so necessary. We see that how, in the chapter Some Objections Answer, this is one of the main big points, that we have to have at the very first this still inquiring sense, that we don't approach something with opinions, with already fixed concepts and already with a sense, what I know is all right, I don't need to know anything else. It's really the wonderful quality of a scientist, you know. That's why you see that so much, that the real good scientist in natural science is a very meek person. He isn't that person that says, well, I know a lot and you don't know anything. I know everything and nobody can tell me anything. He still, the more he knows that he hasn't quite touched the thing, and therefore has a very meek sense of seeing there is more to be known. Perhaps I have to look at a problem quite from a different standpoint, which I don't know yet. These are the qualities of a scientist. It's therefore the searcher, the inquirer.
That humble, receptive thought that Hannah had.
Yes, the receptive thought that Hannah had, yes. So this is a terrific quality. And you see that actually we should see that we can keep that quality as long as we live, that we don't think, oh, I have studied now the science of Christian Science for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. I know quite a bit about it. I really now have a good insight into it. That's all right, we have perhaps better insight, but we still always should have in the back of our mind that attitude, perhaps there is quite a different view at the whole thing, which is absolutely a new paradigm. See, it's the demand and be ready for a paradigm shift. See, we don't know. We don't know. Suddenly there may pop up in the world somebody who will show the whole textbook from a completely different new angle. We don't know. How could we know? It's absolutely possible. But as long as that doesn't happen, we are entitled to give all our thought and devotion to the paradigm that we know now. But always have that open mind that something completely new can come in. Just as John Dolly brought in a completely new view. Yes, that's the poor in spirit. And what happens to those that are poor in spirit? What is the reward? The reward of mind. You said, for there's the kingdom of heaven. What does it mean, for there's the kingdom of heaven, in biblical terms? What is the kingdom of heaven? Beg your pardon?
The realm of harmony,
something like that, yes. So we have a great reward, Yeah. When we come to the second beatitude, what other inward attitude do we have to culture? Yes. What is the second beatitude?
What are they that mourn?
Uh-huh.
They should be
comforted. Uh-huh. All right. Blessed are those that mourn. What is a state of mourning? What is that? What do they mean with a state of mourning? Just crying all day? Weeping all day?
Feeling a sense of separation.
Feeling a sense of separation.
From something that someone, you know, someone passes on, feeling lost.
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh.
Your cherished mortal beliefs.
Ah, that's it, huh? You take it right away from mourning about people, huh? You have to put it into a metaphysical realm. And there it is, really separating oneself from, from cherished beliefs, huh? Mortal beliefs, huh? It's always a sense that if we want to grow spiritually into a further and higher and wider realm, that somehow we can't take the old landmarks with us, that we can't take the whole old world with us. And with that we mean here that we can't take all that what we like with us. Somehow every progressive step of spirit unfolds and brings progress, and every progressive step says you are only progressive if you leave something behind. And that which we leave behind actually is that which we always have liked, or we would be further on already. It's always a sign that we have hung or clung, clung to something that we should actually get rid of. And so a spiritual progress in the human is only too often accompanied with that kind of mourning, a kind of separating oneself from things that have been dear to us, whatever that is. Huh? See, we have to culture that mentality very deeply. We can see so easily that many would like to take up our study, but they know that they would lose a lot humanly, which they cherish. They know they lose their friends. They know that they lose many, many things humanly. They know it. And they don't like to make that sacrifice. But blessed is he that mourns, because he shall be comforted. If they would know, if they really would know the Beatitudes, or if they would know really the second chapter and third chapter, they would happily separate themselves from all that what seemed to be valuable in their human life, because they know there is a divine recompense that is much bigger than the human values. So again, it is a terrific, important inward attitude that we have to culture. And I think everyone doesn't make these steps very easily. It's usually combined with a struggle, with the Jacob struggle. And so I think Jesus just could have said also, blessed is he that struggles, for he shall be comforted. We can't do it without that inner struggle. It's one of the old beliefs of Christian Science, a belief, not an understanding, the old beliefs that everything should just happen, you know, easily, like on a path of roses, birds singing, angel harping along with their harps. And it isn't that way. It isn't that way. If one really wants to have a way of thorns, then you just have to choose a spiritual subject, a religious life. In no other field do you get it so much as in the spiritual life, that you have to go through a whole wilderness of thorns. Day after day, week after week, year after year. And if one doesn't like that, one better doesn't touch it. Because nobody can get around it. That's why it's so important to see these biographies of great spiritual leaders, to read the biography of Jesus, to read the biography of Paul. Who would like to share the life of Paul? I don't know many. Who would like to be stoned all over the place? Who would like to be put into prison? To have three times have shipwrecks? Huh? To be sent to Rome in chains? Who would like to have that? Everybody shuns back. But that's what's necessary. And the question is only that we see that it isn't so bad. That they shall be comforted. Yes. See, Paul said to Barnabas, I'm not going anymore with you. You are a sissy. You know, he didn't think take him anymore on his second journey. He said, you stay home, I can't use you. You always backed out when there was danger. I can't use you. Well, today, who is talking about Barnabas? Who is talking about Paul? Well, the one who did choose the nice, rosy pathway, nobody talks about him. And if you talk about him, it's not really in a good way. But what did Paul achieve for the world? This is terrific. He saved Christianity out of the claws of Jewish doctrine. All the other boys, you know, like Peter and John, so they all went to the synagogue again. They just went back at the beginning, right to the synagogue, teaching circumcision, washing their feet, and going into the temple. And Paul said, nonsense. Get on with the job. We have a new paradigm. We have a completely new paradigm. So they said, all right, but don't tread on our territory. Go to the heathen. Go to the Gentiles. We don't mind if you go there. Thank God. Huh? What would have been left if Paul would have stayed with the Jews? Would Christianity would have swept away? First, it would have been a little, tiny little Jewish religion or sect, and then it would have been swept away. Thank God he went to the non-Jewish people. And I sometimes feel if he only could go to the non-Christian scientists. Yeah. So, blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. The third beatitude is what? What is the third Christian attitude? Yes, Fran? Yes, huh? Now, what are the meek? Are the meek the sissies?
No.
No. Uh-huh. Beg your pardon, I didn't quite hear you.
No false ego.
No false ego, yes. Is that so? Uh-huh.
The right ego.
Good, good. I tried you out, you see. I tried to make you insecure. Just
you.
Uh-huh. That's how I find out, you know. Yes. So, meekness is really not to have a personal ego. That's why we say that Jesus was meek, because he always said, I can't do nothing out of myself. I can only do what I see as the Father do. He had only one ego, a divine ego, that was the Father. And he could see that his true ego was a reflection of that one divine ego. So the meek statement really was also what? I and my Father are one. Huh? That's the meekest. Actually, he was accused of pride, huh? And egotism, that he said, I and the Father are one. Huh? That was heresy. For the Jews, but what he really meant is that was a meek statement. that he says, I'm nothing by myself. Yes, so we come to that quality of seeing that we only have to let God operate within us, not our own selfish will and our own selfish ego, that I cannot decide what should happen, that I let God work within me. For they shall inherit the earth. What is the difference between that reward and the reward in the first beatitude? Yes, in the first beatitude, it was the kingdom of heaven. Huh? Yes. Yeah. And now it is the inherit the earth. Huh? They will now tread on very secure ground. Huh? They have the third day of creation here again, the dry earth, where they tread on very secure ground. You are no more treading on water where you never know if you sink or swim or what, but now you inherit the earth, you really get down to your to security, to safety, and your whole life feels to be safe. Yes. Then we come to the next beatitude. Fourth beatitude. Yes, Louise. You know it so well. Yes. On the tape, this may not be heard, huh? But you said it right. You said, blessed are they, huh, which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, yes, for they shall be filled. Now, what do you feel, why this is principle? Yes. Yes. That's nice, yes. When the Bible says hunger and thirst after righteousness, have you a feeling what the Bible meant with righteousness? Couldn't righteousness be truth? To be right and to right and be always just and so on? Have you thought about that, that that could be truth, hunger after righteousness? You know, today I think we would always associate righteousness, to justice, with truth. Huh? In the textbook, whenever she comes to the judge, it's a judge of truth, the justice of truth, the sword of justice is truth, huh? To do right is truth. And here you have hunger and thirsting after righteousness in the fourth. Have you ever thought about that? Yeah. Well, perhaps one has to have... Yes, Frank?
Well, the righteousness in this case was more obedience rather than righteousness.
Yes, 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 I think so. And, you know, when one reads the Bible, especially the New Testament, and I have to bring it out because for the assignment of next year, the term righteousness was a very important term in the early Christian theology, especially with Paul. And he always associated righteousness in the sense with, actually with principle. You see, they didn't have a term, principle, at his time. The Bible did not know the term principle. If you look up the concordance, the Bible concordance, that has a terrific amount of words, but principle does not appear there. And yet, naturally, they had a sense of principle. See, that was very clear, that they had the sense of a principle ruling everything and governing everything. And so they used the term righteousness for principle, because principle is that which always does right, so to say, which operates in a right way. And that you have to know when reading Paul's epistles, because he always speaks about the righteousness that is before God. And he always wanted to bring that out as the principle that is God. And he was talking that we have now a new righteousness, namely that righteousness which is before God. He meant we have now a new principle, not a new just judge or a new justice. And that you will see in the next assignment, which we'll take, that one can only understand the layout of his epistle when one understands that righteousness is that sense of principle. So perhaps you just make a mental note for next year when we take the Christ translation. Yeah. So it would mean, blessed are they which hunger and thirst. That's a kind of obedience. Hunger and thirst means to do everything and be very awake to do that we are always in accord or in line with principle. That we are watching, so to say, constantly, that at every point we line up with principle. So, and the effect of it, the reward is, and they shall be filled. Again, you could say, well, life is the fullness and life fills, you see. But that is taking these terms too literally. We can't do that. The moment we go to the Bible, we must know that the Bible has another terminology than the textbook. They shall be filled means they shall get it. They get the demonstration. Huh? They will get the reward in demonstration. So that whole fourth beatitude says, well, blessed are you if you are very watchful and very aware that you always try to live in accord, in a relationship, or in accord, in harmony with the principle, because that will demonstrate itself. You get the demonstration.